Hello, and welcome to the African American Hour. I'm Rosemary Onkwe, bringing you readings from the following publications: The Voice Health News, The Beacon, Kansas City, The Voice, Blavity, Ebony, The Root, The Griot, and News One. Today we'll begin our readings from an article from The Voice titled Black Maternal Health Week: Urgency, Advocacy, and Action for Health Equity by The Voice Health News, April 11th, 2025. This year, the call to action is even more urgent. The return of the Trump administration signals policy rollbacks that directly threaten maternal health, disproportionately harming black women. The United States has the highest maternal mortality rate among high-income nations, and black women remain nearly 3.5 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications than white women. With the return of the Trump administration, critical health care protections are being rolled back, reproductive rights further restricted, and maternal health research funding placed at risk. The political stakes in 2025 and the next 4 years will shape the future of black maternal health at a pivotal moment in this ongoing crisis. As we consider these challenges, the evidence becomes starkly clear. The crisis facing black mothers is not new, but it is preventable. Racial bias in health care leads to delayed diagnosis, inadequate treatment, and dismissive attitudes towards black women's pain and medical concerns. For instance, a review published in the Journal of Women's Health reveals that implicit bias in medical decision-making significantly contributes to higher rates of maternal morbidity among black women. The reality is deeply personal for former Missouri Congresswoman Cori Bush, who has publicly shared her own traumatic birthing experiences. In her 2021 congressional testimony, Bush recounted, "At 23 weeks, my son was born, 1 pound, 3 ounces. His ears were still in his head. His eyes were still fused shut. His fingers were smaller than rice. His skin was translucent." She went on to describe how she had sought medical care days earlier, only to be ignored. "I was told that I was fine, and I was sent home, but I wasn't fine. The next morning, I went into preterm labor. My son was born months early because, despite my concerns, my doctor didn't take me seriously." Bush later called out the systemic failures that endanger black mothers and babies. "Every day, black women die because the system denies our humanity. It strips us of our dignity." Her testimony underscores the urgent need for reforms that address racial bias in maternal health care and center the voices of black mothers. Economic and systemic barriers compound the problem. Black women are more likely to experience severe maternal complications like hemorrhage, hypertensive disorders, and infections, often without the timely medical intervention they need. Hospital closures in predominantly black communities, limited insurance coverage, and a shortage of black maternal health providers further exacerbate disparities. Under the previous administration, programs were implemented to expand Medicaid postpartum coverage, invest in black maternal health research, and promote community-based maternal health solutions. Now many of those advances are under threat. Missouri's recent Medicaid expansion offers a critical case study of how policy changes can influence maternal health outcomes. Approved by voters in August 2020 and implemented in October 2021, the expansion aimed to provide coverage to more low-income adults, including women of childbearing age. While specific data on maternal mortality rates post-expansion are still being analyzed. Research indicates that Medicaid expansion is associated with lower maternal mortality rates. A study published in Health Affairs found that states with Medicaid expansion had 6 to 7 fewer maternal deaths per 100,000 live births compared to non-expansion states. The policy change holds promise for improving maternal health outcomes in Missouri. However, sustaining these improvements will require continued investment in Medicaid programs and ensuring newly eligible individuals can navigate the enrollment process effectively. The return of Trump-era policies is already impacting Black maternal health outcomes. Cuts to medical research funding have put critical studies on maternal health disparities in jeopardy. The Guardian reports that budget reductions to the National Institutes of Health, NIH, and other research entities will slow the progress made in understanding and addressing racial disparities in maternal care. Access to reproductive health care is also at risk. The Trump administration has backed a federal abortion ban, which, if enacted, would eliminate access to life-saving reproductive health care for millions of women, particularly in states that have already implemented near-total bans. Reports indicate that maternal deaths have already increased in states with abortion restrictions due to higher rates of forced, high-risk pregnancies. In addition, Trump's renewed efforts to repeal or weaken the Affordable Care Act, ACA, put Medicaid coverage at risk for low-income families. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, states that expanded Medicaid saw maternal deaths decline, particularly for Black women. A reversal of these policies could lead to a devastating rise in preventable maternal deaths. BMHW has always been a time for awareness and activism, but in this political climate, it is a necessity. Black maternal health advocates are not just fighting for policy improvements. They are actively resisting an administration that is reversing progress. The Black Maternal Health Momnibus Act, first introduced in 2021, was designed to address racial disparities in maternal health care through investments in community-driven solutions, research, and improved access to care. While some provisions were passed under President Joe Biden, the Trump administration has deprioritized the legislation. Advocates must now push for state-level adoption of these policies, ensuring local governments step in where federal protections fall short. State Medicaid expansions are another frontline issue. While some states have extended postpartum Medicaid coverage to 12 months, others have resisted expansion efforts. According to the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, states that have extended postpartum coverage have seen improved maternal health outcomes. If federal protections are rolled back, advocacy groups must pressure state leaders to act independently. Grassroots organizations are also critical in addressing Black maternal health disparities. Groups like the National Birth Equity Collaborative and the Black Mamas Matter Alliance continue to lead efforts to train Black birth workers, advocate for policy change, and provide direct support to Black mothers navigating a hostile health care system. In Kansas City, that momentum is fully exemplified by organizations such as Samuel U. Rogers Healthcare Center and Altruism, Inc., the MAIH Center, which deliver essential prenatal, postpartum, and reproductive health services. These direct care providers play a crucial role in addressing maternal health disparities by offering accessible, high-quality care. Their efforts not only meet immediate health care needs, but also serve as scalable models for improving maternal health outcomes across the region. Sustained funding and public support remain vital to ensuring these organizations continue their transformative work. The most effective solutions to the Black maternal health crisis start with centering Black voices. Studies have shown that when Black mothers are cared for by Black physicians, their health outcomes improve significantly. Yet, Black healthcare professionals remain underrepresented in maternal care. Expanding funding for Black midwives, doulas, and OBGYNs, and implementing policies that require implicit bias training in medical schools are essential steps towards change. Additionally, holding healthcare systems accountable for racial bias is crucial. Recent lawsuits have revealed cases where Black women were denied proper maternal care due to discriminatory practices. Strengthening legal protections and increasing transparency in hospital maternal health outcomes can help create a safer and more equitable healthcare system. In 2025, Black Maternal Health Week serves as a powerful reminder that maternal justice is not a privilege, it's a right. In this critical moment, when harmful policies are threatening access to reproductive health care, research funding, and Medicaid protections, your action is needed now more than ever. Here are concrete steps you can take. Contact your health officials. Reach out to your local, state, and federal representatives to demand policies that expand Medicaid, safeguard reproductive rights, and invest in Black maternal health research. Your voice is essential to holding policymakers accountable. Support local organizations. Seek out grassroots organizations in your area that work to improve maternal health outcomes and promote health equity. Your local support can drive community change wherever you live. Stay informed and spread the word. Keep up with developments in maternal health policy and share credible information within your community. Educating yourself and others builds the foundation for sustained change. Participate in advocacy events. Join rallies, forums, and other advocacy events during Black Maternal Health Week and beyond. Your participation amplifies the call for change and demonstrates collective power. Engage in community dialogue. Attend or host local forums where community members, healthcare providers, and policymakers can discuss the challenges and share solutions for improving Black maternal health outcomes. The urgency of this moment cannot be overstated. Advocates, policymakers, and communities must work together to resist harmful policies and push forward solutions that protect Black mothers and babies. The fight for Black maternal health is a fight for reproductive justice, racial justice, and human rights. And in this critical year, advocacy is not optional. It is a matter of survival. This story was originally published by Chrissy Brault, ChrissyBrault, with Access Health. This article was titled Black Maternal Health Week, Urgency, Advocacy, and Action for Health Equity by Voice Health News, April 11th, 2025. Next, an article from The Beacon, Kansas City, titled Man Deported After Visiting Family Grave in Mexico is Back in Kansas City, written by Mary Sanchez, April 8th, 2025. Ebenezer Cortez Martinez, Ebenezer Cortez Martinez, is back on U.S. soil, landing in Kansas City Tuesday afternoon after being deported. The DACA recipient and Kansas father of three feared that he wouldn't be able to return from Mexico, a country he left at the age of four. His Roland Park family embraced in a tearful and joyful reunion at Kansas City International Airport. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection had stopped Cortez Martinez at the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport more than 2 weeks ago after he took a short trip to Mexico to visit his grandfather's grave. he was trying to return to Kansas City. Instead, he was detained and questioned, then put back on a plane to Mexico City on March 23rd. Cortez Martinez is a recipient of DACA, D-A-C-A, or Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. He had never been back to his birth nation, having been brought to the U.S. by his parents as a toddler. His farm worker father tended grapevines in California. Prior to his scheduled trip to Mexico, Cortez Martinez had applied for and received permission to travel and return to the U.S., a process called advance parole. His case is an example of an immigrant who did everything the right way and still ran into problems, said Rekha Sharma Crawford, R-E-K-H-A, S-H-A-R-M-A, C-R-A-W-F-O-R-D, the Kansas City-based immigration attorney who filed a lawsuit April 2nd on behalf of Cortez Martinez with the U.S. District Court of the Northern District of Texas. The case, first reported by The Beacon, drew national attention. The lawsuit has been dismissed because you are home, and that was really the point of the lawsuit, Sharma Crawford told her client at the airport. The government had asked for time to respond, indicating that the issue could be resolved without the judge hearing the case, said Sharma Crawford. There seemed to be some confusion at the time when he was detained in Dallas, Cortez Martinez recalled, because a supervisor had been called over. Still, Cortez Martinez said he was told that he'd been ordered removed in absentia on June 11, 2024, and that his documents allowing him to travel had been issued in error. Cortez Martinez said he was never made aware of that order. I never got any notice, he said. I check everything, because there is all of the paper that we get for DACA renewal. His current DACA is valid until October 2026. Cortez Martinez will now have an opportunity to resolve the recalendering of removal proceedings in Kansas City Immigration Court, said Sharma Crawford. I trust you, Cortez Martinez said to Sharma Crawford. Let's talk as soon as possible. His children carried a poster they made, each signing a note to their father. They also brought happy birthday balloons. Cortez Martinez turned 40 while he was gone. Several other family members also had recent birthdays. Laughing, Cortez Martinez hugged his wife and declared, "We'll have one single party." This article was titled, "Man Deported After Visiting Family Grave in Mexico is Back in Kansas City," written by Mary Sanchez, The Beacon, Kansas City, April 8, 2025. Next, an article from Blavity titled, "Black Mirror Star Issa Rae, I-S-S-A-R-A-E, on the Brandy, Moesha, connection of her character's name," written by Monique Jones, April 11th, 2025. Issa's Rae time on Black Mirror has been meta in several different ways, including playing an actress who wants to change Hollywood's perception of her. Playing an actress who feels boxed in by how Hollywood perceives her and wants to take risks and take the reins on her career. I feel that on so many levels, she told Trey Mangum, T-R-E-Y-M-A-N-G-U-M, managing editor for Blavity / Shadow and Act. Maybe I could imagine that I would, in desperation, take part in an experiment by this, in an experiment like this, but not like this exactly. It's really bleak now in Hollywood. Why Hotel Reverie hit home for Rae amid Hollywood's AI conversations. That was one element that drew me to the script, because seeing that this technology could potentially exist, given all these conversations around AI and using people's IP and likeness without their permission, she continued. Another thing that drew Ray to the series? Her character's name. Ray has said in previous interviews how much Moesha inspired her, as well as her hope to one day work with Brandy in the future. Ray said that her character, being named Brandy, let her know that this was a project for her. It was another way I felt seen, where I was like, well, all right. This is meant for me. I have to say yes, she said. You know, this is so much of the reason that inspired my journey into this industry, and now I get to take her name through this character that is also taking her own non-conventional journey into the industry. The episode partnered Ray with Nosferatu, and Deadpool and Wolverine star Emma Corrin, who plays Ray's love interest in the episode. Ray said working with Corrin was inspiring in its own right. Watching Emma perform and embody this Hollywood starlet was just incredible to witness in real time, she said. It inspired me and helped me to see them transform. There's such a specificity to playing actors from the 40s, so I got to witness them master that accent, that transatlantic made-up accent. And that was just so much fun and made me feel like I really was in this portal through time. Black Mirror Season 7 is now streaming on Netflix. This article was titled Black Mirror Star Issa Rae on the Brandy/Moesha connection of her character's name. Written by Monique Jones, Blavity, April 11th, 2025. The next article is titled Reverend Jesse Jackson Spotlights World Parkinson's Day. Written by Hanaya Philogene, The Griot, April 11th, 2025. April 11th marks World Parkinson's Day, a day designed to raise awareness and understanding for those living with Parkinson's disease, PD. Civil rights advocate Reverend Jesse Jackson is among the approximately 500,000 Americans diagnosed with PD. Today, he's using his platform to celebrate World Parkinson's Day and spotlight his experience living with the disease. April 6th is World Parkinson's Day. Living with Parkinson's disease has involved managing symptoms like tremors, stiffness, and impaired balance, Jackson captioned an Instagram post. It's important to maintain a support network, adhere to medication schedules, and stay physically active to help manage the condition's progression. According to the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Strokes, Parkinson's disease is a progressive movement disorder of the nervous system that weakens, damages, and kills nerve cells in parts of the brain, causing patients to develop symptoms like tremors, limb stiffness, slowed movement, and impaired balance. In addition to movement-related symptoms, the Parkinson's Foundation notes that people with PD can also experience non-motor symptoms like depression, anxiety, apathy, hallucinations, constipation, orthostatic hypotension, sleep disorders, loss of sense of smell, and a variety of cognitive impairments. In 2017, Jackson publicly shared his diagnosis. My family and I began to notice changes about 3 years ago, he said, in a statement per CNN. After a battery of tests, my physicians identified the issue as Parkinson's disease, a disease that bested my father. Recognition of the effects of this disease on me has been painful. However, the civil rights activist did not see his Parkinson's diagnosis as a stop sign, but rather as a signal to make a lifestyle change and invest in physical therapy to slow the disease's progression. As previously reported by The Griot, many black people don't even know they have the disease. With black communities, biological and genetic risk factors for the disease being historically understudied, modern studies reveal the novel risks to these populations have in developing PD. Yet, black people are less likely to be diagnosed with a disease, and black people living with PD are diagnosed at a later disease stage than white people. While there is currently no cure for Parkinson's disease, experts say medicines and exercise can help patients manage the disease. We cannot stop the neurodegenerative process or even reverse it, said Dr. Sule Tinaz, S-U-L-E-T-I-N-A-Z, a Yale medicine neurologist who specializes in movement disorders, including Parkinson's disease. But we're starting to understand how exercise can help change the plasticity of the brain, creating new pathways and strengthening existing ones, thereby changing the functioning of the brain. This article was titled, Reverend Jesse Jackson Spotlights World Parkinson's Day, written by Hanaya Philogene, The Griot, April 11th, 2025. The next article is titled, Michelle Obama Finally Breaks Her Silence on Those Barack Divorce Rumors, written by Angela Johnson, The Root, April 10th, 2025. They say absence makes the heart grow fonder. However, in the case of our forever First Lady, Michelle Obama, some have speculated that her noticeable absence from public events like President Donald Trump's inauguration and former President Jimmy Carter's funeral were signs that her marriage to former President Barack Obama is in trouble. But as the gossip mongers continue to go low, Michelle just did what she does best. She went high, setting the record straight. During an April 8th appearance on the Work in Progress podcast, the former First Lady told host Sophia Bush that her recent absence from the spotlight has been a personal choice to reclaim her time. She added how it had nothing to do with marital problems with Barack. We as women, I think we struggle with disappointing people, she said. They couldn't even fathom that I was making a choice for myself, that they had to assume that my husband and I are divorcing. This couldn't be a grown woman just making a set of decisions herself. But that's what society does to us. Obama, who has been married to Barack for over 30 years, has been open about the toll her family's time in the White House took on everyone. In her book, Becoming, the mother of two wrote about how she often felt misunderstood and how she struggled to hold on to her identity while protecting her daughters, Malia and Sasha, from scrutiny. The former FLOTUS told Sophia Bush that she often used her kids and her role as the president's wife as a reason to put her life on the back burner. Now that she's made a conscious choice to step away from politics, she has time to figure out what she wants to do on her own terms. Now is the time for me to start asking myself these hard questions of, who do I truly want to be every day? And that changes, she said. If it doesn't fit into the sort of stereotype of what people think we should do, then it gets labeled as something negative and horrible. Although she's stepping out of the spotlight, Obama hasn't been spending her time on the couch binging Netflix, even though we would argue she has every right to do. The Chicago native has written two whole books, Becoming and The Light We Carry, and produced the reality series The Later Daters through her company, Higher Ground Productions. She's also still deeply committed to her work to advance the rights of women and girls around the world. I still find time to give speeches, to be out there in the world, to work on projects, Obama said. I still care about girls' education. This article was titled, Michelle Obama Finally Breaks Her Silence on Those Barack Divorce Rumors, written by Angela Johnson, The Root, April 10th, 2025. Next, another article from The Voice titled, How Romantic Relationships Affect Mental Health, by Stacker, April 8, 2025. With their potential for love, conflict, and vulnerability, it's no surprise that romantic relationships and mental health are deeply connected. A growing body of research shows that healthy relationships can provide emotional support and resilience. While relationship distress can be a strong predictor of mental health challenges like depression and anxiety, the link between relationships and mental health is bidirectional as well. Data shows that whether or not someone has a mental health condition can influence dating decisions, and there are instances where mental health issues might lead people to avoid relationships or choose emotionally unsupportive partners. When someone is struggling with their mental health, it can shape everything from how they communicate to the types of partners they seek out, said Caroline Fenkel, F-E-N-K-E-L, DSW-LCSW, Chief Clinical Officer and Co-Founder of Charlie Health. We often see that unprocessed trauma, anxiety, or depression can lead to patterns of avoidance, conflict, or even choosing emotionally unavailable partners, which reinforces those struggles rather than alleviate them. Understanding the link between romantic relationships and mental health can help people cultivate healthier relationships and improve their overall well-being. To better understand the role of relationships in mental health, Charlie Health looked at the research, exploring how relationships shape emotional well-being and how mental health concerns influence relationship dynamics. Committed relationships tend to provide the greatest mental health benefits. While all relationships impact mental health, research suggests that more committed relationships like marriage tend to provide greater psychological benefits than less committed ones, such as cohabitation. A 2017 review of the studies found that while mentally healthier individuals are more likely to enter relationships, the relationships themselves also play a significant role in shaping mental well-being. The research suggests that while mental health does influence relationships, relationships have an even stronger effect on mental health. Additionally, improving relationship quality is linked to better mental health outcomes, but the reverse is less consistent, highlighting the importance of fostering healthy, supportive partnerships. Supportive romantic relationships can positively impact mental well-being, even for those with serious mental health conditions. A 2023 study on people with psychosis found that participants who had a partner and were satisfied with their relationship experienced better overall mental well-being and fewer depressive symptoms of psychosis. This link remained significant when demographic variables were accounted for too. A stable, healthy partnership can provide emotional grounding, reduce feelings of isolation, and create a sense of safety for those facing serious conditions, all of which are critical for overall well-being and symptom management, said Fenkel. Unhappy or conflicted relationships can contribute to or actively underlying mental health struggles, depression specifically. A 2023 article found that marital distress is as strongly linked to depression as much as or more than factors like sex, education, and childhood trauma. Earlier research supports this connection. A 1999 study of 904 married people found that those in unhappy marriages were nearly three times more likely to develop major depression within a year. Marital dissatisfaction accounted for almost 30% of new depression cases among participants, even when controlling for demographics and past depression. These findings were consistent across gender and history of depression, reinforcing the idea that relationship problems can contribute to major depressive episodes. By contrast, healthy relationships may help reduce depression. However, healthy relationships can actually help reduce depression. Research has found that self-expansion, a process where people incorporate aspects of their partner into their sense of self or behaviors, is linked to fewer depressive symptoms, both on a daily basis and over a 9-month period. This finding holds true even when accounting for age, gender, relationship length, and other factors, according to the research. Mental health influences dating decisions. Research shows that mental health concerns can shape relationship choices. A 2022 study of college students found that mental health played a role in their relationship decisions, including starting, maintaining, and ending relationships. For some, anxiety might lead someone to overthink and seek constant reassurance, while depression can make emotional connection feel exhausting. Understanding these influences can help people make more intentional, supportive relationship choices, says Finkel. According to the study, men, particularly white heterosexual men, were more likely to consider a partner's mental health before entering a relationship and to attribute relationship challenges to mental health issues. Also, more participants reported ending a relationship due to a partner's mental health than being broken up with for the same reason, with no significant differences by gender, race, or sexual orientation. How to cultivate a healthy relationship. Since relationships and mental health are so closely linked, fostering a healthy relationship can positively impact emotional well-being. Cultivating a healthy relationship starts with self-awareness, understanding your own emotional needs, triggers, and communication style, explains Finkel. Here are some key strategies to strengthen your relationship while supporting your mental health. Prioritize open communication. Healthy relationships are built on honest and open communication. Expressing thoughts, feelings, and concerns with your partner fosters trust and emotional security. If relationship challenges arise, discussing them openly can help prevent issues from escalating. Establish and respect boundaries. While closeness is important, personal space and independence are also essential. Setting and respecting boundaries allows both partners to maintain a sense of autonomy while fostering a supportive, balanced connection. Engage in shared experiences. Participating in activities together, whether trying new hobbies, traveling, or working toward shared goals, can enhance self-expansion within a relationship. As mentioned, research suggests that self-expansion not only strengthens relationships, but also improves mental health by reducing depression symptoms. Seek support when needed. If you or your partner are struggling with mental health challenges, seeking support, whether through therapy, counseling, or peer groups, can provide valuable tools for managing relationship stressors and emotional well-being. This story was produced by Charlie Health and reviewed and distributed by Stacker. How Romantic Relationships Affect Mental Health. The Voice, April 8, 2025. Post-Eaton Fire. Altadena Boys shifts focus to youth mentorship. What started as a donation drive is now a growing movement. Written by Victoria Kim. April 14, 2025. In the wake of the Eaton fire, Altadena Boys quickly mobilized to support youth upended by the destructive Southern California blaze. The organization launched in January with a 6-day donation drive that drew a huge community response. Months later, it's still going strong. The nonprofit is now looking ahead to the future beyond wildfire recovery, taking shape as a steady source of ongoing support for kids in and around Altadena. Altadena Boys founder and CEO, Samantha Mora, M-O-R-A, and her son evacuated as the Eaton fire approached their Pasadena home in January. Though it was spared, They lived close enough to witness the devastation just up the road in Altadena. When Mora's now 9-year-old Logan learned that his friend had lost his home in the fire, he didn't hesitate to offer up his own PC and Xbox. "My son and Eli always game together, whether it's Fortnite or Roblox," said the Los Angeles mom. "Of course I wanted to allow him to do that." Instead, she took it further. Inspired by Altadena Girls, which also formed to support Eaton Fire Recovery, Mora launched Altadena Boys to uplift kids like Eli. It started with an Instagram post inviting anyone interested in donating or getting involved to reach out. Overnight, my inbox was flooded with different brands, local artists, just people reaching out, wanting to help, she told News One. I launched on a Sunday night, and by Monday morning, I was already having meetings. In less than a week, Mora and her team set up a donation center, and Altadena Boys opened the doors to its first pop-up in East Hollywood. The week-long donation drive was a total success, each day welcoming residents lined up and down the block. The donation pop-up was more than a place to stock up on essentials. Kids, boys and girls, got a momentary escape from the reality of the Eaton Fire, which still burned as the donation drive went on. Families browsed an impressive array of items, everything from basic necessities like shampoo and shaving supplies to clothing, shoes, and even exclusive gear like custom skateboards. An area set up with TVs, toys, board games, and more gave kids a place to relax and have a little fun. In just a few months, Altadena Boys had scaled quickly. What began as a donation drive in January has evolved with the needs of the community, expanding its focus to the bigger picture as they continue supporting kids affected by the fire. "Where we're at right now is kind of like a new reality," said Mora. "I feel like it's not something tangible we want to give. More so giving these boys an option where they can think about their futures while their parents are not able to guide them right now." With a new storefront in Highland Park, Altadena Boys is transitioning from donation drives to youth empowerment programming. Their next phase will offer mentorships, career development opportunities, skill-building workshops, sports camps, and more. With Altadena Boys COO Miles Garber securing brand partnerships with names like Vans, Fender, Marshall, and Supreme, the organization is well positioned to maintain this momentum with plenty of support behind it. As a boy mom herself, Mora sees the power in supporting boys and designating this space for them, as Altadena Girls does for girls. "Let's create this safe space for them, empower them, and just really drive them," said Mora. "We need to stand up for these boys." LA's skate community played a major role in shaping the evolution of Altadena Boys. "They reached out and they've been helping till this day," said Mora. "They are our biggest supporters." "Skateboarding offers the kids more than a new skill," she explained. "It's a pathway to disciplines like fashion and photography. The goal is to empower the boys in a creative field and build their confidence. We're able to offer them a new skill and a new hobby," said Mora. "I'm hoping to spark their creativity with a piece of board." Also, Altadena Boys' future are plans to host pop-ups in other skate-friendly cities like San Francisco and New York. These cities have vibrant skate, art, and youth communities, but they also face deep gaps in safe spaces for boys to process trauma, build confidence, and connect in meaningful ways, Mora said. "San Francisco and New York City are full of talent and energy, but also isolation and struggle. We want to meet boys where they are and bring our proven model to places where it's needed just as much." Altadena Boys created a space that the community needed all along. The organization's growth and ability to expand its programming are made possible by the people who continue to show up and support, whether with their dollars or their time. Community showed out For sure, said Mora. They said, whatever it is, we want to help. Some of the organization's biggest supporters have been the boys themselves, who helped bring each activation to life. They love Altadena boys, and they want to be involved, said Mora. We're lucky to be a part of their lives and guide them. This generation is insane. These boys are so smart. This article was titled, Post-Eaton Fire, Altadena Boys Shift Focus to Youth Mentorship, by Victoria Kim, News 1, April 14, 2025. Next, another article from The Griot titled, Why Shoppers Are Ditching Target for Costco After DEI Fallback, in quotes, I Wanted Them to Stand Up, written by Natasha S. Alford, A-L-F-O-R-D, April 7th, 2025. Chi Walker, C-H-I, used to be a faithful Target customer. The professional chef, who is based in Detroit, was such a regular at the store that she had funds set aside for her shopping. I was a true Target girl, Walker told the Griot with a chuckle. I called it making my weekly donation, or even tithing, you know. I loved Target. The 44-year-old entrepreneur was specifically attracted to Target's dedication to uplifting independent small business, women-owned businesses, and black-owned brands like the Honey Pot or the Lip Bar, a personal favorite of Walker, since the makeup brand's founder, Melissa Butler, is a Detroit native. Walker, who is black, said her Target loyalty changed at the beginning of the year, when the company announced it would do away with its hiring goals for groups considered to be minorities as part of a larger rollback of DEI, or Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion initiatives. The shift came in light of President Donald Trump's issuance of an executive order that targeted diversity, equity, and inclusion, and ending illegal discrimination, in quotes, while, in quotes, restoring merit-based opportunity. While the order immediately affected operations in the federal government, it explicitly called out the private sector, promising to use the power of the U.S. Attorney General's office to advance in the private sector the policy of individual initiative, excellence, and hard work. For Chi Walker, this was a moment where she expected Target to double down on DEI instead of backing down. I felt heartbroken, quite honestly, Walker told the Griot. It was like it was all a lie. Whatever alliances, whatever allyship that you had within, you know, supporting minorities was performative. You did not mean it, and I took it very personally. Not only did Walker perceive Target's DEI retreat as a personal slight to her hard-earned dollars, but she also took it as a sign to take her business elsewhere. Walker joins an undisclosed number of shoppers who are boycotting Target, which is starting to have a real financial impact on the corporate shopping giant. The original boycott, organized by Pastor Jamal Bryant of New Birth Missionary Baptist Church, and officially known as the Target Fast, called for 40 days abstaining from the store and redirecting money to black-owned brands. But many customers have not only abstained from Target, but also taken their business to Costco instead. The choice is intentional. Costco's CEO has openly defended diversity, equity, and inclusion, and thanks to a nod from Reverend Al Sharpton, who organized a buy-in of the wholesale brand, Costco is seeing a boost in profits. A recent report from Numerator says surveys and assessment of foot traffic show 7.7 million more visits to Costco and 5 million fewer visits to Target for 4 weeks in February. The changes are highly visible in black and non-black Hispanic households. They acknowledge some other factors may have impacted the numbers, but do see a connection to the boycott. They weren't scared, you know what I'm saying, Walker said, regarding Costco's pro-DEI stance. It's like you may get backlash. The president has made this executive order that you no longer have to do these things. And they stood 10 toes down and said, well, no, this is what we want to do. We want everyone to be represented in our business. Other shoppers the Griot spoke with across the country say they too have shifted from Target to Costco to show their support for diversity, equity, and inclusion. I felt as if my dollars or my culture did not matter to Target, said Tara Page, a 51-year-old patio designer from Texas. I wanted them to stand up to stakeholders on my behalf, and they did not. Netta Jenkins, a leadership expert and published author, told the Griot that Target to Costco's shift is one of the most compelling business case studies of our time. Target, once heralded as a progressive brand, made a fatal misstep, Jenkins said. Overnight, it distanced itself from the very principles that built consumer trust, exposing itself as an example of consumer exploitation, leading consumers to believe they valued all people, only to backtrack when opposition arose. Meanwhile, Costco has not only stood firm, it has supercharged its teams and consumers to an entirely new level. I drive 30 minutes away from my home just to shop at Costco, she explained. Costco is thriving because consumers recognize authenticity and reward companies that honor their commitments. When asked if they would return to Target if the company changed its stance, some customers say it's too late to apologize. While I thought I would miss the vibe, I do not, explained Tara Page. It's nothing to pass by Target and walk into Costco for absolutely nothing more than a blue vibe. For Chi Walker, the feeling of detachment is the same. I don't miss it, which is odd because it was an abrupt thing for me to decide that I'm not going to shop here anymore, she told the Griot. I don't know that they could get me to go back because then it would still be performance in my mind. Walker believes that any company or brand that doesn't recognize the value of diversity, equity, and inclusion is missing the value in customers like herself. It's something that's just innately comfortable or comforting when you see yourself represented in these spaces. It's like I'm part of the club. You respect me, you respect my dollar, you respect my business. This article was titled, Why Shoppers Are Ditching Target for Costco After DEI Fallback. I Wanted Them to Stand Up, written by Natasha S. Alford, The Griot, April 7th, 2025. Next, a special article from Black Enterprise titled, Howard University Professor Launches GoFundMe to Help HBCU Journalism Students Graduate, written by Naila Abdurrahman, NAHLAHABDUR-RAHMAN, April 29th, 2025. Dr. Stacy Patton, PATTON, launched a GoFundMe to help some of her students relieve their outstanding tuition payments. With a goal of $20,000, donors can help these HBCU students achieve a milestone that they have worked years for. These student journalists have spent the past 4 years pouring their energy, brilliance, and resilience into their education, wrote the Howard professor in the GoFundMe page description. They've weathered personal hardships, financial strain, a pandemic, and a society that constantly underestimates them, and still they rose. They completed every course, passed every exam, met every requirement to earn their degrees. She continued, but now a cruel technicality threatens to keep them from the moment they've dreamed of, walking across the stage in cap and gown, hearing their name called, and seeing the pride shine on their families' faces. Outstanding tuition and fees, just a few hundred or a few thousand, stand in the way. Patton emphasized the students' academic achievements despite the financial struggles. She wrote to impassioned donors that their graduation depends on the support of their overarching community due to systemic obstacles they cannot overcome alone. After everything they've sacrificed, everything they've achieved, they may be blocked from graduating simply because of financial hardship. She noted how this experience is not uncommon for many HBCU students at Howard and elsewhere. With limited opportunities and funding available, many are left with no other options to complete their education. Most have already used a combination of work-study, extra jobs, loans, and scholarships to pay these debts. However, it does not always resolve these ongoing issues. Thanks to HBCU, funding proposed by the Trump administration may harshen this reality for matriculating students. With anti-DEI legislation looming, HBCU students must rely on themselves and Black scholarship supporters to get across the finish line. Your donation, no matter the amount, can bridge the final gap, continued Patton. It can put college degrees into hands that have already earned them. It can open the doors of newsrooms, production studios, and communication fields to Black storytellers whose voices the world desperately needs. Thankfully, Patton has already surpassed her 20K goal in the GoFundMe. Now this current class of dedicated journalism majors can graduate and make their mark on the world. However, the work to ensure future classes can focus their studies and not financial strain continues, stifled by Trump's rescinding of the White House initiative on HBCUs. The progress of these storied institutions lies in the hands of those who understand and promote the importance of an HBCU education. This article was titled, Howard University Professor Launches GoFundMe to Help HBCU Journalism Students Graduate, written by Naila Abdur-Rahman, Black Enterprise, April 29th, 2025. That's all the time we have for the African American Hour. My name is Rosemary Unkwe. Thanks for joining me.